let's get right into it. Into the dunking, the debunking, the
debunking.
Dunking.
What did he just say?
Dunking.
Oh. You know, I've been a skeptic most of my adult life, but this has opened new doors for me.
He who was foretold by Milo many moons ago hath shown up to stride upon the earth once more. All shall fear him. All shall fear him.
Well, hello and welcome back to the next episode of Dedunking. In this one, we're going to go back to our roots and debunk Mini Minuteman's take on Ancient Apocalypse Part 5. In this one, we get to go to Göbekli Tepe. I know, it's everybody's favorite place. Milo got to go and I just had to stay here and not get responded to by Stefan, which we'll talk about that in our next video. Anyway, let's get to work.
To begin this episode, Graham Hancock implies that in the ruins left behind by ancient civilizations, they left us an encoded message, a warning to keep our eyes on the stars lest the same fate befall us that befell them. This is a compelling hypothesis, one that makes us think of things like national treasure and secret clues and mysteries left encoded for future generations to find. But it is also a thesis that can be combated by saying, why would the ancients have given a single shit about us? This hypothesis makes the foundation of episode 5, but it's an important hypothesis to analyze first, because it implies that we are far more significant and important than we actually are. Nothing that you do in your life today is done with the intent of people 12,000 years from now discovering it and being able to learn from it. And I can say without a shadow of a doubt that the same thing applied for people who lived 12,000 years ago.
Well, let me cast a little bit of a shadow of doubt on that there for you, buddy. You ever heard of a thing called a time capsule? Yeah, it's something that people put in the ground because they do give two shits about the future. More specifically, it's not about them thinking the future's important. We're important. That's what it is. We think we're so important that the future is going to give a shit about us. That's the whole point of time capsules, right? We're sending a message in a bottle to the future that they're going to want to read because it's from us. I don't think these guys were trying to save the world in the future. I don't think that they were encoding this warning of the stars and the stones like Hancock believes. I think it's a lot more grounded than that. I believe that they thought that their afterlife was contingent on them being remembered. I think that's why they sent messages down in stone that would not get destroyed, that there's no way you're going to wipe out some of these things. I believe that they felt like they needed to be remembered in order for their afterlife to continue. That's just my hypothesis, but I think it makes a lot more sense than them trying to save us from the future. And if we superimpose my hypothesis over Hancock's here, we can continue this conversation without it being...
They are as distant to us as we are to them. In fact, we are even more distant to them than they are to us, because they didn't even know we would end up existing one day. I cannot fathom what the world will look like 12,000 years from now, or if humans will even exist then. And so just like I am not going to waste my time leaving encoded messages to people 12,000 years in the future, the ancients didn't do it either.
Well, that's an interesting take, Milo, but I'm going to put a picture here of this star map that they have by Hoover Dam, and it's is made for future generations to be able to tell when that thing was made, even if they speak some language that we don't even know now, because it's made to last for a very, very, very long time. A message to future generations. A message saying when this building was built using celestial alignments. A message to future generations. I wonder if that's going to come up again in this video.
Göbekli Tepe is one of the most important archaeological sites ever discovered. When it was found in 1994, it completely changed the way that we view ancient people.
Yes, it sure has changed the way we consider the history of human civilization. Absolutely. But I don't think you guys have taken all the implications of your new hypothesis on this into consideration. Not yours personally, Milo, but you as a member of the archaeological establishment.
Göbekli Tepe is a megalithic site located in Turkey. Now, the pyramids of Giza and megalithic sites like that are old, the pyramids dating back to about 4,000 years ago. But Göbekli Tepe blows that out of the water. It dates back a staggering 11,600 years.
Oh, 11,000 years ago, huh? Damn. That's kind of crazy, because there's this guy that I've been following for like 30 years, and he's talked about that for a long time and kept saying that eventually we would have structures dated to then, and now... we do have megalithic structures dated to then. You know, when he talked about the pyramid and stellar alignments in regards to the pyramids, they usually push them out of the way with this thing called dating. Oh, no, your dates don't line up at all with our dates. I wonder if that's going to happen here.
What makes this site even more incredible is that this site predates agriculture, which historically has been something which archaeologists use as a hallmark for the point after which megalithic structures can be built. Because once you have agriculture, your society needs to spend less time hunting and gathering, which gives them more downtime, and they have a steady source of food, and they can contribute all of their energy to large-scale megalithic projects like this, which is why we see a correlation between the amount of megalithic and large-scale projects in the ancient world that runs right alongside the rise of agriculture. And yet, Göbekli Tepe predates all of that.
See, now this is interesting because all of a sudden, you guys are saying that we don't need agriculture in order to develop low-level technology. Not just megaliths. Now that's where you guys are going to pin it, but there's plenty of other things that we wouldn't need low-level, that we wouldn't need agriculture for in order to develop. Plenty of low-level tech that we wouldn't need agriculture for, according to the same hypothesis you guys are putting out here. If these guys can figure out how to stack all these rocks and build enclosures and do all this without just decimating their fucking population, they could probably figure out how to do other things like build a boat or who knows what else, right?
Meaning that it was built by people who were in all likelihood still hunter-gatherers. Now, Graham Hancock has a very interesting way of telling us this. He says that Göbekli Tepe shouldn't exist, which is dumb because there it is, and it does exist. Now, it may seem like I'm nitpicking language here. Obviously, he's not trying to debunk the fact that it exists, but it sets the tone that he's going to present the rest of the episode with, which is this idea that Göbekli Tepe is some sort of oddity, something that needs a deep and, you know, massive explanation behind it.
What a weird position for him to take. I can't even believe it. It's like we have this site that you say rewrote the beginning of human history, and it's enigmatic in the regards that pretty much everywhere else they had agriculture before they did that shit, but here they didn't have agriculture before they did that shit. Why would he think that would require a weird explanation? I don't get it. Just because it's a one-off doesn't mean that it's a one-off.
So again, as I've said at the beginning of every other episode so far, he has already set the stage for you to doubt the legitimacy of this site, greasing the skids to be able to give you his hypothesis at the end and prepping you to be able to accept it.
Well, it's probably a pretty good thing you don't do anything like that to Hancock then, huh?
He says that the locals at the time would have been hunter-gatherers living in mud huts, which further adds to the idea that you need to doubt that Göbekli Tepe was built by hunter-gatherers. He really wants you to think that archaeologists are portraying the people that built Göbekli Tepe as being primitive savages who were incapable of doing anything other than spear the mammoth. But nobody actually thinks like that. I mean, hunter-gatherer or not, they built this. I would sooner judge them on their construction skills over whether or not they were growing their crops or harvesting them from a field naturally. That doesn't really dictate how sophisticated they were as a people. But Graham Hancock needs to make it seem like these two things are incompatible. He needs to make it seem like hunter-gatherers wouldn't be capable of doing this, because once you accept the reality that they were, then his hypothesis doesn't really need to exist anymore.
No, I want you to look at this from the perspective of somebody like me who's been watching this play out for a long time. We see Hancock posit, we're going to find remains of megalithic structures that are 10,000 plus years old eventually. It's just a matter of time. We see mainstream archaeologists tell him that's insanity. Get the fuck out of here with that shit. And then Göbekli Tepe crops up. And now, without any evidence besides Göbekli Tepe, you still discard Hancock's entire hypothesis and just say, well, I guess hunter-gatherers can build things now with or without a surplus of food. We don't really know how. I guess maybe they ran a lot of bison off a cliff. Shit, we don't know, but they did it, right? That is, like, to pretend that you're addressing this in any sort of a scientific level while doing stuff like that is really, it's just disingenuous, man.
He tries to throw a little bit more mysticism into the beginning, doing the classic tactic of saying, we don't know how they lifted these blocks into place, which always cracks me up. You hear that in just about every conspiracy, whether it be Stonehenge, the pyramids at Giza, Machu Picchu, any of that stuff. They're like, how did they lift them? Which is just foolish, because when you look at a stone that has been lifted into place, it doesn't really matter how it was lifted, because it clearly was. It's just this this way of trying to muddy the water and make it seem like there's more mystery around it than there is. Whether they lifted it by piling stones under it, lifting it with ropes, or just getting a bunch of dudes to put their back into it doesn't change the fact that it was built by these people.
I think the point that he was getting at here was that we don't know how they did it because they're presumed to have not had any simple machines. They didn't know about ropes or pulleys or the wheel or any of this shit, right? An inclined plane was about as good as they were going to get as far as that stuff goes. So in that regards, yeah, we don't know how they built it. Now, yeah, it's there, so that doesn't matter in the regards of whether or not it exists. But in the regards of how did hunter-gatherers manage to put this together, it's a lot of things for them to come in. All at once, they come up with the technique for building, agriculture, and whatever simple machines are involved with building that, which may be a rope, it may be a freaking inclined plane, it may be a lever. It could be a pulley or a wheel. There's a lot of things that could be involved, but the fact of the matter is, it's pretty enigmatic. And you're just kind of dismissing it, which sucks, man. Come on.
Now, one of the most amazing things about Göbekli Tepe is the art. Not only is it a spectacular megalithic site, but the pillars are carved with hundreds of these beautiful pictographs. One of the most infamous of these is the Vulture Stone, and one which Graham Hancock talks about ad nauseum throughout the course of this episode. Which, firstly, before we taint it by talking about what Graham Hancock has to say, let's all take a moment to look at that. Man, that's fucking cool.
And for a brief moment, like two ships in the night, me and Milo go past each other and say, "Yes, that is fucking cool." And then we're back on our own separate ways.
Graham Hancock is not one to be able to deduce whether or not these carvings are symbolic or not. As far as my research has taken me, the jury is still out on it. We don't know what these carvings represent. They could very well literally be a carving of a vulture that was just a vulture. They could be a spirit or a god, or who knows, maybe it's a map or something like that. The point is, we don't know. Understanding the intention behind art is something which is really difficult to do.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. It can be really difficult to interpret art. But we do sometimes bring science to bear on these things, right? Surely you're aware of that.
In episode 5, Graham Hancock begins to repeat the same thing he said in the episode where he went to Malta. How did they succeed at their first attempt of building something like this? On Malta, you know, he goes to Gigantea and he's like, well, there's no smaller temples. You'd expect to see smaller temples. So someone must have showed up and taught them how to do this. Just because Göbekli Tepe was, at the time that it was found, the oldest megalithic site on Earth, nobody ever would tell you that this is the oldest megalithic site, period. Do I think that Graham Hancock thinks that people are actually saying this was their first attempt to build something? Absolutely not. But what he is doing here is making it sound like this is what other people think, because then it makes them sound so ridiculous that anything he says to you is going to be something you believe. He has a great quote, which sort of ties on to this, which is, he says it a lot throughout this episode. He says, "You don't just wake up one morning and decide to build this," which is just boiling it down to such a infantile level that it's just comedic.
Sure, it's definitely an oversimplification, but what he's saying is apt. It is true that they just kind of like showed up on the scene with the ability to do this stuff, like you say, without agriculture, which would normally be considered one of the prime prerequisites for it. It is weird. I don't like the way he words it either, but, you know, he's an author. What do you do? You guys are all snaky with your words. But Milo is aware nowadays, too, and I think he learned it on the Lore Lodge hangout, or maybe before that even. But by then, he definitely was aware that Hancock has that saying of, you know, if things keep getting older, he doesn't think Göbekli Tepe is the oldest site. He's certain that there's much older things that we'll find. It's just that he's been hanging his hat for so long on we're going to find some really old shit, and we didn't for so long that he's going nuts with it, man. You can't really blame him. He's predicted this all my adult life. He was predicting this before you were born, Milo.
Now we get into the brunt of it, where Graham Hancock says that this is, quote, "not the miraculous overnight invention of hunter-gatherers, but a legacy from a lost advanced civilization that mainstream archaeology finds offensive." The thing that I find the most offensive about this show is just how much whining Graham Hancock does. Seriously, I know that Dr. McCafferty said that Graham Hancock is great to work with, and I'm sure he would be lovely to actually be able to sit down and talk to, but man, the way that he paints himself throughout this episode is just insufferable.
Now, why would a guy who predicted that we would find megalithic structures that were over 10,000 years old was openly mocked by academics for it, but then they do find him and they completely ignore the hypothesis that he used to predict that? Why would he be upset with that community? I totally don't understand it. I mean, look at how you're handling this here, buddy. You're like, we know this exists, therefore, fuck his hypothesis. Yeah, he probably feels a little bit like, this is stupid. I don't even know why I talk to you people. That tends to be the way that he's gone about a lot of this. Like I mentioned before, the way he treated some of the archaeologists by kind of roping them into shit, he's going to get diminishing returns from that. If he tries to make another special in 5 years, he'll probably find he doesn't have nearly as many people willing to sign up for it that have letters next to their name.
We have to remember that in Graham Hancock's story, archaeologists are the bad guys, and so he has to vilify them at any chance he gets. So by saying that mainstream archaeology finds this idea offensive, he is othering someone, and that way anyone who's watching the show who has a little thought in their head of like, wow, maybe he actually is kind of full of shit, they're going to subconsciously not want to be othered, and it will make them a little bit, maybe reluctantly, agree with his theories later on. It's just a very manipulative tactic, and he does it for literally the entire series, and I'll get to that later, but it's just amazing to witness. It really goes to show how far you can get if you're just really good at talking. Hypothetically.
Yeah, I know what you mean. Being a good talker is, helps this, making it better is with the YouTubes. But something that I figure is worth pointing out here is when you're talking about othering people and the way that, like, you pigeonhole them into certain groups and stuff, and that way you can make it where you don't want to be othered and stuff. Would labeling people pseudo-archaeologists fall into that category? I'm just asking for a friend.
So after talking about Göbekli Tepe, which I appear to already have erased, he goes to the next site. Karahan Tepe is awesome. This site predates Göbekli Tepe. It was only very recently discovered. It's still being excavated, and they are finding all kinds of crazy stuff there. And you want to know the best thing is this series is the very first time that they allowed outside camera crews into it. The debut of one of the oldest megalithic sites on planet Earth was on Ancient Apocalypse. It is just such a shame that the debut of this pivotal archaeological site had to be on a conspiracy television series.
I'm sorry. I just got... money sucks, doesn't it?
Anyway, Graham Hancock stands in a room with a bunch of penises. Do you really think I wasn't going to draw this one? Of course I'm going to draw this one. There's a room at Karahan Tepe that is full of 10 enormous stone phalluses, and Graham Hancock stands in it for a while, and frankly, it's my favorite part of the entire series. He also notes that there's a giant stone head that's overlooking all of it, and it makes him feel like it's very sinister. He's sad now. I would like to propose this to be the new thumbnail art for episode 5 of Ancient Apocalypse on Netflix. If you would like to use this, Netflix, feel free to contact me as long as you pay me, I don't know, half of whatever you gave Graham Hancock to make his penis show.
I gotta hand it to you, Milo. You do crack some good jokes in this episode. But you know what? You don't really need to get half of the money that he's getting for that Netflix special for that art or any of it, because you're already getting plenty of money talking about his Netflix special. And a lot of times you really don't know what you're talking about, man. No offense, but come on.
So Graham Hancock's theory about why Göbekli Tepe and Karahan Tepe exist is that there was the lost civilization who showed up and taught and mobilized the hunter-gatherers of the area to make these sites. Which is weird because it's admitting that hunter-gatherers had the capability to do it and the only thing that someone needed to do was teach them, which sounds a lot like you're saying they were really stupid. So see, what they did is they actually did build these sites, but it wasn't because it was their own idea, it was because the Atlanteans came out of the sea and told them, hey, what if you stacked up some rocks, and they were like, well, that's a great idea.
Again, you said yourself, this site is weird. This site stands out like a sore thumb. This site rewrote history in a lot of ways. So it's not crazy for him to point out that it's weird for these guys to have all of a sudden figured out how to do this. It would have taken some sort of tools. They weren't going to be doing all this shit with just their bare hands. And so that's the part where it's like, well, yeah, when do people invent the wheel? Does that mean a culture that hasn't invented the wheel, is that us saying that they're stupid? Is that us saying those simple people didn't have any clue about the wheel? I'd say simple. You guys wouldn't, apparently. We've been over this. But You get what I'm saying? We don't say that they're stupid because they didn't invent the wheel. They just hadn't got there yet. We don't say that people were stupid because they had the four humors instead of germ disease theory. They just hadn't got there yet. They were still intelligent people. They just hadn't have all the data we do now.
So he claims that these Atlanteans or whatever came from the sea and taught the people at Göbekli Tepe and Karahan Tepe how to build these sites and then taught them agriculture as well, which is weird. It doesn't really take into account the fact that plants take thousands of years to become domesticated, and it's not a process that was done consciously. And we have, you know, records of all these plants slowly being domesticated over time in different parts of the world, and there is no common crop through all different parts of the world that you think there would be if there was a lost civilization that knew how to farm and introduced it to people. It's so annoying because Graham Hancock's theory actually makes Göbekli Tepe and Karahan Tepe even less impressive, because the whole reason they are so archaeologically significant is because they were built before the advent of agriculture. They are so impressive because they have made archaeologists reassess the way that they think about megalithic sites. They have made archaeologists question and change the things that we think our ancestors were capable of, because archaeologists change their beliefs when presented with new facts, despite what Graham Hancock may tell you.
Well, sure. As long as those facts fit into the whole scheme of things, you will move the pieces around in order to make it where, well, Göbekli Tepe can't exist without us having to have an advanced civilization to come and teach them how to do anything because, well, I don't know. It's there, right? See, the fact that it exists before agriculture is extremely impressive. And to disregard that enigma as just like, well, I guess they fucking figured it out. There's two things here. There's one of two things. Either you have to entertain Hancock's hypothesis, or you disregard Hancock's hypothesis altogether and you say that they were able to develop low-level technology without a large surplus of food created by agriculture. And at that point, you can't use the, we don't find genetics for animals, we don't find genetics for plants, as a cudgel against these guys, this lost civilization, unless they're fucking flying shit around and stuff. Why can't they build a boat with no surplus of food? Why can't they figure out how to do something simple like write without a surplus of food? You guys have opened the door for all kinds of shit with Göbekli Tepe and your interpretation of it. So, you know, it... This whole, what's taking the magic out of it? No, what's taking the magic out of Göbekli Tepe, in my opinion, is this hardcore academic, this is how it must be, what's going to fit into this, we'll just slightly change things, and we'll shove this in here without any real reason for doing so, except for, well, all the rest of this framework exists, therefore it definitely goes in. Again, to those of us that have been watching this play out for a long time, that is like one of the most unscientific things that has happened in regard to Hancock's work in the last 30 years.
We're back to the Vulture Stone now. I hope you brought your rubber bands, because this one's a stretch. Graham Hancock talks with a man named Martin Sweatman, who claims that the Vulture Stone is a star map, and he says that it represents asterisms or star clusters. Now, what star cluster does that look like to you? And now he notes that on the Vulture Stone, there is a scorpion motif. And so, obviously, he says that this is the constellation Scorpio. I don't know about you, but every time I go out with someone who knows things about constellations, and they go up and they're like, hey, look at that, it's Orion's Belt. I look at them and I go, are you on crack? There is no constellation that actually looks like the things people says it looks like. So if you're telling me that someone looked at the sky 12,000 years ago and was like, man, that looks like a scorpion, then you are absolutely full of it. This again is Graham Hancock and this Martin guy falling into the same trap of thinking that we are way more important than we actually are. Why would people 12,000 years ago have used the same astrological signs we do? One of the oldest zodiacs that we have is the zodiac of Dendera, which I talked about in my Dendera Light video, and this carving predates that by 10,000 years. You cannot tell me that those people were looking at the sky and seeing the same things that we do. But because Graham Hancock told you at the beginning of this episode that these are more symbolic carvings, he has already greased the skids for you to be like, man, those do line up pretty good. That must be Scorpio.
Why does a clock have 12 points instead of 10? You see, the zodiac has been actually used to predict the future, and not in the way that they do today. But it was the original clock. If you look at the night sky and you break it down over the course of the entire year, there are 12 symbols in the sky that are basically equal distances apart, and they're all right on the horizon on the time that the sun would rise when they're in the right position on the clock. Humans did this as a way to tell time. And this is on the equinoxes and on the solstices. You draw the same cross that you draw on a clock with 12 and 6 and 9 and 3. It is very much emulated. As a matter of fact, if you look at ancient Chinese sundials, which they don't even use the same freaking astrological charts as we do here in the West, they still had 12 and 24. This is a very old distinction. We cut our circles into 360 degrees. The ancient Egyptians had a 360-day year with the 5 days of celebrations. That Dendera calendar shows it if you look close enough. This is quite possibly the oldest esoteric knowledge that humanity has ever had, and it's been passed down for a very, very, very long time. And there's one thing that's very important here to think about, is that when you are the cardinal points that I spoke about, like we live now in the age of Aquarius, and that is because on the vernal equinox, if you were to look due east, you will see the astrological symbol of Aquarius at dawn when the sun rises, and the sun will rise into it. That's what they mean in astrology by the sun's in the house of Aquarius. It's in that constellation visibly from here. So the age of a certain time, when this first became a thing, the very first time that a human was like, okay, we're going to divide the sky up this way, they would have had four symbols. They would have had each equinox and each solstice. And once every 72 years, thanks to precession of the equinoxes, slowly that would get out of alignment. And now look at the animals and stuff involved, and just use your imagination for a minute and imagine a family sitting there and the dad talking to the kid and saying, look at that lion up in the sky and watch him eat the sun this morning. And this is what happens on this time of year. And then this time of year, it's this other animal fighting with the sun. And then this story gets passed down as a way to help remember this. But one day it doesn't make sense anymore because that fucking animal ain't there no more. So now you have to name four new animals. So by the time that that Dendera chart has come along, your Dendera calendar, when it's got all those different symbols, by the time the Greeks have codified their 12 astrological symbols, that shit is old. It's changed at least twice, which each time's 21,000, or each time's 2,160 years, so that's another 5,000 or 4,300 years you can tack on to whatever the oldest one we found, just using your head and thinking it through. Personally, but on an off note, this is the kind of stuff that I love about archaeoastronomy. It's not just archaeology, and it's not just, oh, look at the stars and line them up with the building. It's like thinking about putting your mind into the ancient's mind like an archaeologist would, but with the stars, because, man, what was back in the early days, what would have been the greatest show on earth? You spend your day fighting and killing and making food and taking care of your family and making sure everything's taken care of and everybody works together as a team, and at night you lay up and just get blown the hell away. And I get to get blown the hell away by that same sky every night. I personally, I love this shit. Anyway, let's carry on.
So now that we know that the Scorpion is actually the Scorpio constellation, well, then you can just plop that on a star map and boom, what do you know? The Vulture is Sagittarius and something else is connected to something else as well. And he says that the center circle is the sun and that it's all like a giant calendar pointing us to a certain date to warn those in the future to watch out for the thing that destroyed them. I know I've said this a million times in this series so far, but it really does feel like these people just watched National Treasure as a kid and no one told them that that's not actually how the real world works.
I'll give Milo the benefit of the doubt here because his whole you can't aim a door at stars thing from the episode about Sirius and Malta, I'm just going to assume that he didn't even bother looking into this. This is a peer-reviewed published paper. Martin Sweatman's not just some dude. He's a chemist, but he's a mathematician, and he is an archaeoastronomer who published this paper, and it was peer-reviewed, and it's published. It gone through the peer review process for archaeoastronomy. So while the serious thing at Malta, the, you know, just disbelief can make sense, this is sure, you don't have to accept the findings. It's one paper and it is contested. There's people that argue with it, but it's the only peer-reviewed work on the subject that I'm aware of. It's the only one I can find, and it's not junk. It uses that Scorpio as a starting off point, which is the way that they would do it. They need something to go with. If you watch my episode on archaeoastronomy, plug, you'll know that like this is, it's old world, so they're going to have to bring hardcore maths to bear because they don't have mythology. And he did just that. It's not like he's just like, oh yeah, this is what I'm thinking. No, man, they used a lot of statistical analysis to remove chance. Anyway, I'll post the link down below, and I encourage everybody to read the paper. Again, there's plenty of contested stuff here, but him not representing this as a peer-reviewed published paper is kind of a huge thing here. Hancock should have said something about that as well, but Hancock doesn't seem to care much about science as far as like an authority goes. He doesn't give a shit. Milo and myself, we both should care quite a bit that this is a peer-reviewed paper. This elevates it from the level of, you know, it's Scorpio, or fucking, I don't know, this looks like that, into science discerning what the art is. It's what you guys do, buddy. You just need to look at some stars in this case.
Graham Hancock says that all of this is evidence that Göbekli Tepe and Karahan Tepe and all these pillars are pointing towards this being a reboot of civilization. Civilization wiped clean by the wrath of God during the Younger Dryas and then rebooted by the Atlanteans who taught people how to put rocks together. He says that it's not just a cultural site, but it's a memory. It's a warning, which is super flashy and cool sounding, but also doesn't really make any sense. And he hasn't given us any evidence for it other than just saying it.
That's not entirely true. I mean, he did bring out a guy who published a paper on it, and it does talk about the place being most likely a place built to watch the Perseid and Taurid meteor streams, which would make sense if the world had just been smacked by a rock. Now, again, I don't think that the whole point of any of this was to warn future generations. I think much more that it was about their spiritual beliefs, and that it was important that people remembered this culture from before this horrible thing, or how will our souls go on in the afterlife? We will all no longer be immortal if they forget who we are. I think that's what it is. And just on a side note, I think that's why things like the pyramid are built all fucking goofy, where it's like enigmatic and kind of a big puzzle box. I don't think there's any magic woo to be found there. I think they want us doing exactly what we're doing right now, talking about it still today. I think that was their intention.
I haven't even talked that much about archaeology this episode because there's so little archaeology in this now that I can't even apply my knowledge base because the things he's saying are just so out there.
Well, if you're having trouble applying your knowledge base to a peer-reviewed published paper on archaeoastronomy, I would suggest adding a little astronomy to your repertoire. You know, get a fucking telescope, look at the night sky a little bit, read about what the ancients thought about the night sky and how it was incorporated into their lives. I mean, I know you're an archaeologist, so this stuff's probably interesting to you to a degree. But if you dovetail that with the astronomy, all of a sudden you're going to find that papers like this aren't quite as hard for you to understand. Hell, my dumb electrician ass could do it, and I don't even need to know anything except for what ohm means.
It really is essentially an unfalsifiable hypothesis. Like, can I prove to you without a shadow of a doubt that Atlanteans didn't come out of the sea and teach people how to build Göbekli Tepe? I mean, I guess not really, but does it seem like a very logical conclusion?
You could say that Atlanteans came out of the sea to teach people how to put rocks on top of each other. Or you could say that a civilization was displaced and taught their skills and knowledges to another civilization that was less developed when they moved into the area. One of those sounds less scientific than the other. One of those would be, I don't know, this guy I was watching his video, he was talking about greasing the skids so that people would think a certain way. Well, thank you very much for getting this far. That'll end today's episode of Dedunking. I appreciate you watching. Don't forget to like, subscribe, go to the social media things, click the buttons, and have a great day.
I don't know about you, but every time I go out with someone who knows things about constellations and they go up and they're like, hey, look at that. It's Orion's belt. I look at them and I go, are you on crack?